This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Originating from the Investar Bank Tower in Baton Rouge, and your producer is Robin Dow, and the number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. The number to call and donate for the Fall Member Drive, which is ongoing, is 855-893-9753. And it's $2 Tuesday. You can join at only $2. Become a member, $2 a month. And as an incentive, you'll select, if you wish, the Stand with the Facts button and Magnet Bundle. And we'll have more about that. But a nice premium. And some of those who have called and contributed during this hour of programming over the last few days: Diane, Dee, Brian, Carl, Kim, Jane, Alan, Marlene, Michael, Tom, Corey, and Todd. So thank you very much. And again, 855-893-9753 or WRKF.org. And we are joined for a brief moment by Ted James. He'll be with us for this segment. As we know, he is one of the primary candidates in the race for mayor. He knows his town well. He served as state representative, left his post in 2022 to become an administrator, the Region 6 administrator for the U.S. Small Business Administration, overseeing the SBA operations in Arkansas, Louisiana, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas. He resigned that post earlier this year, and he is running for mayor president, and the election is 1 week from today. And we know it's going to be a close race, most likely, for first, second, and third. But the key is to make the runoff and go to December. How do you, as we stand a week away, Ted James, look at the tenor of the race and the strategy as far as making the runoff?
No, I feel very strong, Jim, and I apologize for not being there in studio. I'm joining you from Baton Rouge General. My mom has been going through some health challenges, so I hate that I'm not there.
But we wish your mom well.
Thank you. We feel real strong about where we are. Not too concerned about polls right now. We're concerned about what we hear out there, and we're going to continue to do the same thing that we've been doing for the last 4 or 5 months. We're crisscrossing this parish, and our message is resonating, and we feel good about our chances next week.
Well, as I said, the two of you have been going toe-to-toe, and you were allies for many years. One of the purported disagreements is that you thought she was not running for a third term. Why did you think she was going to retire after two terms as mayor president? Mayor Broome.
You know, Jim, the past doesn't really matter at this point, right? I'm focused on the next 4 years. The mayor believes that things are going well in Baton Rouge. I believe that we could be doing a lot more in terms of keeping the community safe, pulling down infrastructure dollars. And while the mayor is focused on talking about me, I'm focused, and my plan is to talk about us and how we move East Baton Rouge Parish forward.
Well, she does accuse you of being MAGA aligned because I guess you have received some support from people who are MAGA types, like Eddie Rasponi, who's been on this show and expressed his loyalty and devotion to Donald Trump. But you're trying to win an election, and these are people who are movers and shakers in our community. Is it necessary to align yourself with some of these people with whom you and other Democrats disagree with?
You know, Jim, I'm proudly endorsed by the Democratic Party and proudly endorsed by several of my former Republican colleagues. Running for mayor president, I've committed to being a leader for any and everybody. And it's ironic that the mayor once said our government has been so divided by partisanship and gridlock, but Ted has the skills to ensure effective results by focusing on bipartisan solutions. She was right when she said it, and because of what she has said about me and because of my experience and my work in the legislature, I've proven her right by being able to connect and work with folks of all parties. The only thing that is different this time is that my ability to work across the aisle does not benefit her. But let's not talk about the mayor anymore. Let's talk about a lot of the issues that I'm
having. Well, there was, and we'll finish with this, that recording that you say was doctored in which you appears to say that white men would work better with a black man than a black woman. What happened there? If you'd like to address it.
Oh yeah, I don't mind addressing it. You know, when you get deceptive tactics secret recordings and heavily edited conversations. You know, one of the things is, Jim, I've told that story multiple times on the campaign trail, and I was merely sharing something that has been told to me. And I think that you heard in a recording, even as bad as it was edited and sloppily put together, I didn't say that those are my thoughts. And I actually said that I disagree with the notion. You know, when you talk about my issues concerning women, I have been a very, very, very staunch supporter of issues that impact women as a father of a daughter. And, you know, I think that when you get to the point as a 30 plus year public servant and an 8-year incumbent, and you send your campaign manager to secretly record somebody and then doctor it up, that's just not the person I think should be leading our parish moving forward. Now, you know, I will concede that, you know, for me, I don't go around checking everyone to make sure they're not recording me, because I probably, my message doesn't change no matter if I'm in St. George, Zachary, Baker, or Central. So I'm not mad that the mayor ended up hiring and rewarding someone. The mayor considered her to be courageous. I consider her to be conniving. But what I said then is, you know, recounting a conversation that was had and someone shared with me. And then, of course, the second part was me obviously mocking the ridiculousness of the mayor, saying that I'm a MAGA supporter, and her good friend Woody Jenkins saying that I'm woke. And what I said is that, you know, I can't be both, and people have tried to put me in a box. And it's unfortunate, but, you know, I am proud of the fact that I've been able to pull support from every city, every political affiliation in this town. And we haven't seen this in a long time. And I think, you know, I know that scares certain people, but again, I intend to be the mayor president for every single person in this parish.
Well, I've seen polls seeing you running first, second, or third, and we'll take the polls for what they're worth, and they're snapshots, and they're not worth much. The real poll, of course, comes 1 week from today, but a listener makes a good point that in this particular race, your biggest opponent may be Sid Edwards, who you mentioned, Woody Jenkins. Jenkins put him in the race, and Coach Edwards has all but admitted that. And as we know, the coach hasn't voted in almost 9 years. So what's your perception of him as a potential candidate? What a nice man, but is this his thing?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the polls are obviously showing that we're leading because both sides wouldn't be attacking me, right? You know, the one thing that I have different from both Sharon and Sid is that I've never been Woody's handpicked candidate. They both share that designation as someone that Woody handpicked to put in the public service. I have developed a very close relationship with Sid Edwards. He and I were sitting before a debate last night. You know, I congratulated him on being a 200 winning coach, and I hope that he returns to the field so he could get up to 250, right? I just, you know, I like Coach. I just don't think that
he might try to do both. He might do both. I don't think he's...
It's going to be hard. Look, I told him that I want him to win every game unless he's playing my alma mater, McKinley. But, you know, seriously, the issues impacting East Baton Rouge Parish, I don't think that at this point either one of the candidates, the major candidates, are, you know, ready to tackle the Baton Rouge of the future. And that's why I'm here. And I think that's why both sides are coming at us, because our message has resonated with the people of Baton Rouge.
A listener asked about the amendment to change the government in Baton Rouge to some degree. Are you going to vote for this or against
it? I've already voted against it. And, you know, once I'm elected, the people of this parish are going to trust that I will make hiring decisions that move our parish forward. I don't support the council being able to come in and veto my decision. Secondly, there are some plan of government changes that I would like to propose, and I don't want us to have the city parish or the voters vote on a change this year and then again. But, you know, I recognize that when we've had an administration, when we've had 5 CAOs in 7 years, I understand the concern there. But my commitment is to hire a staff that has a mixture of economic development experience, mm-hmm. government experience, political experience, and people rave about some of the former CAOs in this parish that were great, and they weren't city managers. So it's not the fact that we need a city manager. We just need a mayor that is going to appoint a top-notch staff, and that's my commitment to the people of this parish.
Well, we are short on time in this segment, and Ted James is joining us with a medical emergency involving his mother. He's been very gracious through the years joining us, and I'm sure he will continue to be that way. And Mayor Broom has agreed to be with us Thursday. But if you were prognosticating 1, 2, 3, how do you see the race next Tuesday? Who's first, second, and third on November 5th in this race?
Jim, I intend to run first, and that's why the attacks are coming, because the mayor and her team, they're seeing the same numbers that I'm seeing, but also the pulse in the community. I mean, just the energy in Zachary, Baton Rouge, Baker Zachary, and St. George. I intend to run first next week.
Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And we switch gears. Ted James, unfortunately, could not be with us any longer. He's dealing with his mother, who is, I understand, quite ill and at the hospital. But we wish Representative James and his family well. And we, of course, have a national election in 7 days that will be at the top of the ballot. And in Louisiana, we arrive in droves when it comes to a presidential election. Donald Trump got more than 1.2 million votes when he won here in 2020 in Louisiana, more votes than anybody's ever received in any election in our state. And Joe Biden was at 856,000 votes. 856,000 would win almost all the governor's races in the history of our state, with a few exceptions. To give you an example, Jeff Landry won with 547,000 votes last year for governor, 309,000 fewer votes than Joe Biden got, and Biden got about 40% of the votes in the presidential election. So for whatever reason, we turn out mightily when it comes to casting ballots for president, and then that means mayors, races like the mayor, president of Baton Rouge are affected, because there's heavy turnout, as there will be 1 week from today. And with us is Pearson Cross. He is a professor and director of the School of Behavioral and Social Sciences at University of Louisiana, Monroe, and he logged a generation at ULM. And we're going to talk about a few matters involving where we are a week out and how Louisiana plays. At one time, we were a swing state. We elected, in this state, we voted for the winners of every presidential election from 1972 to 2004. And that all changed in 2008 when Barack Obama won in a veritable landslide nationally over John McCain, and Louisiana went handsomely for Senator McCain. But you have written about it and talked about it, Dr. Cross. What's your take on where we are and why we no longer get visits from presidential aspirants and advertisements from them? It's just not a ground in which Trump and Harris are interested, because they know how it's going to go, apparently.
Well, I guess we were very shortly, and thanks, by the way, for having me on your show. I guess we were very shortly a swing state. Maybe you could. We were somewhat competitive in 92 and 96 when, Clinton was taking the state, but that was the last hurrah for the Democrats. And shortly after that, we departed for the Republican Party, and Republicans have had their way ever since. And so it's not really surprising, Louisiana was this part of the solid Democratic South for 100 years, and then we switched over, and now we're part of the solid Republican South. So there's a certain consistency in what we do, but it does mean that no one comes and visits us at election time, except just to pick up some checks.
And Pearson Cross has written about some of these things in The Party is Over, one of the best books about Louisiana politics in modern time, The New Louisiana Politics. He was a co-writer, and it is a must-read for political junkies and still available. But we are not a player, and most of the Southeastern Conference is not in play. In the SEC, the only state apparently up for grabs is Georgia. Now, our friend Jim Kitchens, who's a very good pollster, says there could be a surprise in Florida. But Kitchens is an outlier, and if he's right, people are going to be knocking on his door because he's predicting a Harris win. And in Georgia right now, which went very narrowly for Joe Biden 4 years ago, in his latest poll, and he polls every night, he's got Harris at 51 and Trump at 47. And in Florida, which is considered to be safe Trump terrain by most pollsters, he's got Harris 48.8 and Trump 48.0. So Jim Kitchens, as I said, he's a very good pollster, and hopefully we will have him back soon and very soon. He's predicting that there's going to be a surprise and that Harris will win, and right now the odds in Vegas indicate that Trump will win. What's going on, Pearson Cross?
Well, let me just say that if Kitchens pulls this off and is the one person voice crying in the wilderness that's going to say Harris is going to take, you know, Florida and Georgia and maybe North Carolina and actually does it, he's going to eat out on that for the rest of his entire career. I mean, that would be amazing. Most of the other people seem to think that the polls are pretty much straight up. And in fact, this particular election, poll-wise, if you've been studying the polls, there almost has never been an election that's this tight. I mean, there are seven swing states, right? And all of them are within 1 point, typically, of each other in terms of support for Harris and Trump. So the people who do the polls professionally, they're racking their brains. They're saying, what are we missing? It's odd. They know there's going to be a swing. So it could be a swing towards Trump. It could be a swing towards Harris. But they don't know the factors that are going to indicate that the swing is happening or how it's going to work. So you have them saying crazy things like, well, it could be a runaway for either candidate, you know, which leaves those of us who actually are looking at this and worrying about the whole outcome going, well, that's great.
Well, right now in Vegas, the Real Clear Politics betting average has Trump a 62.7% favorite to win the election. And in the swing states, he is now ahead in every one of them, albeit close. But in some states like Georgia, he's now more than 2 points ahead in this compilation of polls. But Harris can win the election and lose Georgia and lose North Carolina and lose Arizona and lose Nevada. But she's got to win Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and the congressional seat in Omaha to get to 270. Some people believe she can do that, but those states right now are all within the margin of error, and Trump is underpolled in two previous cycles, which I think is a real reason why most people are picking him in a tight race, because the last two times out, he's outperformed poll numbers. But Harris, I think, has cause for concern, but if she gets her vote out, Pearson Cross, and she has a better ground game, purportedly, she will be the next president of the United States. If you were picking a winner right now, who would you pick?
Well, I'd pick Donald Trump. And this doesn't have to do with my support for either candidate, but based on what I'm seeing in the polls and in the lack of a clear indication, my gut is telling me that Donald Trump is going to break through in Pennsylvania or somewhere else. But it may or may not happen. Obviously, this is just so tight. I'm just not sure what is going to happen.
And Trump is out there. He's out there, and he didn't debate Harris, and I'm sure his advisors told him not to after the first debacle. But he is saying things a front runner would ordinarily not say, and he's got this stream of consciousness thing, and he talks sometimes for a couple of hours, as we know. Robin Dow has the latest in which Trump is actually musing about a possible death of one of his allies, one of his most ferocious defenders, Marjorie Taylor Greene, driving a hydrogen car. Let's hear it.
Not recognizable if something goes wrong. If something goes wrong and Marjorie Taylor Greene with that beautiful blonde hair is driving down the highway in a hydrogen car. And the problem with a hydrogen car, if something goes wrong, it's like the atom bomb went off. You're not recognizable. But they say, we think we have it under control. That's not good enough. They'll say, we thought it was Marjorie Taylor Greene riding down the middle of the turnpike, but she's no longer recognizable. We found some of her. I won't say. We love her. Stand up. Marjorie, stand up.
He breaks all the rules, doesn't he, Pearson?
You know, it's incredible. I mean, just that stream of thought. That's something that, you know, you probably don't see with any other candidate, and he does it again and again and again. And, you know, he did it like there was the huge Madison Square Garden thing, and, you know, and he's done it in many circumstances, and it doesn't seem to cost him. I think by this time, a lot of Donald Trump is baked into people's expectations, and people who support him say, oh, well, that's just Donald being Donald. I really care about the economy. And frankly, I think that at the end of the day is going to be the single biggest factor. People remember inflation. People remember feeling like they're losing their place. And I think that more than anything else is going to be the important factor.
Pearson Cross, professor of political science at UL Monroe, and he was previously at the University of Louisiana Lafayette for many years, and he knows the political terrain locally and nationally about as well as anybody. He's back after this. Your number, 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Pearson Cross is with us, professor at UL Monroe. He was associate dean of liberal arts at UL Lafayette, and he knows Louisiana well. But back in the day, he was educated in the great city of San Francisco when Kamala Harris was a young person on the rise. And it is amazing that city has produced so many politicos, including Harris and Nancy Pelosi and Gavin Newsom and Jerry Brown and Willie Brown. And you can go down the list. There are more, Dianne Feinstein, the senator, Barbara Boxer, all from San Francisco, California. But Harris is the first one to be a political contender for the presidency. Jerry Brown ran some races and did not do particularly well, although in 76, if he had gotten in earlier, he might have had a shot against Jimmy Carter. He won 7 of the last 9 primaries, but it was too late. But Harris has a shot. And it's mainly because of her opponent. Donald Trump is a wounded warrior. But it is amazing that these are the choices, Pearson Cross. I think if either party were drawing up a candidate who they thought would win, they would not choose either Harris or Trump.
Well, I think that's quite right. And I've said frequently to other people that if anyone besides Donald Trump was running to represent the Republican Party, they'd be a shoo-in. And this race wouldn't be close because, frankly, the Democrats have presided over what's been a very, very slack economy and some real pain for people and the COVID experience and everything else. So there's if you look at the figures regarding how people think government's doing, they're terrible. Only about 25% think government's going in the right direction. So I think people are due for a change. And frankly, if that change was anyone other than Donald Trump, it would probably be a rush to get that change in place. But I think Donald Trump gives Kamala Harris some legs, so, and makes it a competitive race.
Well, a competitive race that he could win with all of his flaws, and he is the first convicted felon to ever run for president of the United States of America as a nominee of a major party. And if he wins, the odds are he will have the Senate and the House. And can you imagine Donald Trump with unfettered access to the levers of power, which appears to be what would happen if he is to win Pearson Cross? He gives every indication that he will use that power.
He does, and although he's been disavowing Project 2025, I don't really believe those disavowals. It's looking more and more like there is going to be a Republican majority in the Senate, or very likely to be, and it's unclear that the House will switch at all. So he may have complete control of government. If so, you would expect him to exercise that control. He was frustrated last time not being able to do what he wanted to do, supposedly. And this time I think he would go out of his way to do that, and he wouldn't have people standing around him saying, no, you can't really do that, Mr. President.
877-217-5757 for Pearson Cross, professor at UL Monroe. And the listener notes that the former president has threatened to revoke broadcast licenses, including CBS. Okay. And also asked about the rescinding of the endorsement by the Washington Post. Obviously, I think this is apparent that the owner of the Post, Jeff Bezos, who also owns Amazon, he didn't want to rankle Donald Trump. Marty Baron, former guest on this show and the keynoter at the WRKF Founders Luncheon, said the same yesterday on Morning Edition. People are afraid of Trump, maybe for good reason. What do you make of it, Pearson?
Well, I read Bezos' description of why he did it, and of course, in the Washington Post this morning, and it was, saying I did it for high principles. Newspapers undermine their nonpartisan status when they endorse people, and nobody's going to change their view based on what a newspaper says anyway. And of course, all of that's true, but at the end of the day, one has to think, wait a minute, Donald Trump has shown some willingness to go after Bezos and after Bezos's financial projects. And one has to think that Bezos said, well, this is a convenient way that I can probably just make sure I don't, you know, collect more of his ire.
877-217-5757 for Pearson Cross. Doug on I-10. Doug, good morning. You're on with Dr. Cross.
Good morning. You finally hit upon what should be the crux of this election, which is that should Trump win, we will be in an autocracy, a word which most Americans probably don't understand. And the fact that Bezos did what he did and has lied about it, and the fact that so many of the most powerful billionaires are afraid of Trump, afraid to oppose him, shows that we're already in an autocracy because they believe what he's telling them, and they believe that he will go after them should he win. Now, what they are forgetting is that when you look what happened in Russia with Putin, the fact that they were so rich didn't protect them at all. And that's what will happen here, but it's going to be scant help for the rest of us.
All right. Well, Doug, you make some points that are echoed by many, probably 45% of the country. But you don't win elections with 45% often. But Donald Trump won an election without a majority or a plurality. He's the only person other than John Quincy Adams to be president without ever winning an overall vote. And now the overall vote looks close, which is really alarming for Harris, because Pearson, if she's to win, you would think she'll have to win by 3 or 4 points nationwide to pull off wins in those swing states. But
well,
what about,
I want you to
address Doug's comment about the full control of the government by one party led by Donald Trump, and it's his party.
Yeah, with regard to the previous election, you know, in 2020, you know, Biden going into the election was ahead in the polls by about 4.5% nationwide. And that led to a very, very tight victory, as you know, in states like Georgia and Pennsylvania and so on, just thousands of votes, frankly. So this time around, Kamala Harris is either straight up or maybe even slightly behind in national polls. It's hard to imagine how she gets overcomes what's that kind of built-in undercount of Donald Trump. And as far as the autocracy and the unconstrained Donald Trump in office, yes, it's true. I mean, one of the things that Donald Trump has done is that Donald Trump has a great ability to shoot himself in the foot and has done so over and over again, thereby being the savior in some ways for people who were scared of what he might do just through his general inefficiency and so on. However, one thinks that, you know, if he has the House and the Senate, that he'll have much more success doing exactly what he wants to do. But, you know, even people who say that this is likely what's going to happen say, look, American democracy is resilient, and at the end of the day, Donald Trump's not going to be a dictator. He may say he wants to be a dictator, but the courts are going to hold him up. He doesn't control all the courts. The court is our federal system mostly. Even the Supreme Court may get off its supine back and actually force him to stop doing some of the things he's doing.
877-217-5757, if you'd like to get under the wire with Pearson Cross. And we are 7 days out. Pearson Cross, like many others right now, is predicting a Donald Trump victory. But it comes down to turnout, and Harris has a better ground game. Trump has poor organization based on people who've been following this. But he has a legion of followers who will go. They'll go to the mat for him, and they voted for him twice. And when you voted for somebody twice, Pearson, it's hard to change that inertia.
Boy, we've seen that in Louisiana, you know, with the people that we've had over and over getting elected to office. You know, there's that loyalty built in that every time someone comes to the muster, yeah, the voters step up. And I think we see that with Trump. He has a very strong brand with his group, and those people will vote for him again and again and support him pretty much no matter what he does or says.
And a listener, Tracy at the Capitol, makes, I think, a cogent point in a long email about Trump and Clay Higgins. Higgins is representing one of the great cities of America in Lafayette, but many view him as a buffoon, and yet he's wildly popular in Acadiana. Is that analogous to the devotion that many have for the former president?
I don't know that they're so devoted to Clay Higgins, but it is part of the same thing. You know, I see it as really starting around the time of the around 2010 with a financial dislocation and the rise of the Tea Party, this sort of outsider movement in American politics that culminated ultimately in 2016 with the election of Donald Trump, but also swept Clay in on that same kind of outsider angst. I mean, to beat Scott Angell, who of course was the favorite hometown son of Acadiana, so handily in that congressional runoff was really one of the major political lessons of my life, given that I had gone on record saying, oh yes, Angell will win easily. And since then, Clay Higgins has faced no opposition essentially of any note. And
yeah, but
so that's really been a change.
Last time, as Tom on Bluebonnet notes, and Mark Ballard does in a front page story today, John Breaux, Charles Bustani, and Chris John all endorsed Holden Hoggett, who got slammed by Clay Higgins, body slammed by this guy who's pugnacious, as Mark points out. And Tom says that John Breaux couldn't beat Clay Higgins today, and I think he's right. But we're going to spend a few more minutes with Pearson Cross as we go to the break. Your number 877-217-5757. But a reminder, we're in the fall membership drive. Your support is essential. We only come to you twice a year asking for your support. And this is one of those times. And without your contributions, WRKF would not be what it is. And come January, we'll have been here for 45 years. It's $2 Tuesday. You can join at only $2 a month. And you'll get some nice incentives, the Stand with the Facts button and Magnet Bundle, and your gift will be matched dollar for dollar thanks to the Member Match Fund. And lastly, if you make a donation in any amount, you will be automatically entered into a drawing for a tailgate catering package valued at $500 from Jed's Local. And the site for contest rules is wrkf.org/rules. The number again is 855-893-9753. You can go to the website anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day at wrkf.org. But if you call that number, 855-893-9753, you'll be out in 89.3 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Again, the number to contribute. If you like this hour of programming, we would like for you to call right now at 855-893-9753. A few more minutes with Pearson Cross, and then we'll go to a fine author, Dr. Diane Ersensaft, and her book is Gender Explained, and the social issues are really taking precedent in this race. The economy usually is the issue, and as Pearson Cross said, all the polls show that most voters think Trump did a better job in the economy, even though the numbers on jobs and growth are much better under Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. But let's go to a few calls, and please be brief. We are in the lightning round with Pearson Cross. Rod in Lafayette. Rod, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah. Yes, good morning, Jim and Dr. Cross. I have a question, and perhaps someone can enlighten me on this. I keep hearing over and over that that the economy is a real issue, but if I'm not mistaken, the GNP is at a record high. Inflation is near a record low at 2%. Salaries are a record high.
All right. All those numbers are good. Inflation was not low for most of the Biden term, and that was COVID-related. Inflation was high all over the world, but perception is reality, and it's hard to fight that off. And Pearson, do you believe with this huge gender gap that social issues are now taking precedent over economic issues in this race to some extent?
Well, yeah, it's a two-part race. If you look at support, women supporting like Kamala Harris, you see that the issues, the cultural issues, abortion and other kinds of things are important. If you look at men and you say, wow, there are all these white men supporting Donald Trump, particularly young white men, I would tie that specifically to economics. There was a great article in the Times the other day about the relative position of young white men and white job, you know, jobs that people without college educations would fulfill.
Okay, we do have to roll, and Robin wants to slide in Matt in Mid-City, who's been waiting longest. Matt, you're on with Dr. Cross. Please be brief. You'll be our final caller.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Yes.
A lot has been being made of the early vote numbers, but considering that Trump openly ran against early voting and mail-in voting last time, and considering the anomalies of voting during a pandemic, what should we make of these numbers?
What about the thank you, Matt. Good question. What about the huge spike in early voting, Pearson Cross, all over the country? Anything to be read from this?
Well, just that early voting is here to stay, and that apparently what Donald Trump has said about early voting and absentee and all those other things isn't really taking with his electorate. They're enthusiastic to vote, as enthusiastic as Democrats. So this is going to be a very high turnout election. I expect it to far exceed the last one.
Thank you, sir. Always a pleasure. Let's talk again soon, Dr. Pearson Cross. Appreciate
Sounds
it.
Great.
With us now is Diane Ehrenstaff. She is a developmental and clinical psychologist whose numerous books include The Gender Creative Child and Gender Born, Gender Made. She is the co-founder and director of the Mental Health at the Child and Adolescent Gender Center at the University of California, San Francisco, where she is also an associate professor of pediatrics. Dr. Ehrenstaff's latest book is Gender Explained, A New Understanding of Identity in a Gender Creative World. And we, as we segue from politics to this, obviously this is an issue in the presidential election. On all these NFL games, I see spots over and over from the former president about Kamala Harris and her stand on transgender people. Why so much confusion and so much antipathy about people who are making decisions that are perhaps, well, I don't think perhaps, have to be the most difficult decision anybody ever makes to go this route, Diane? What are your thoughts about this?
Very good question, Jim, and thank you for having me. And what I would say is I wish we could take the gender out of politics and just have it be the lives that people live, but it has entered the political domain. And I think what we're seeing now is it makes people very nervous when things change in the world, and things have changed around gender. So I think we're living in a new world, a new zeitgeist, where gender no longer lives just in two boxes and isn't determined the day you're born, but unfolds over the course of your life. And we see a lot of young people saying, you know, I am not the gender you thought I was, or I'm not going to do gender in the way some people think it should be done. And this makes all of us feel off balance. So our job now is to get in balance around that.
Well, your book covers ground that things I didn't know. For example, it was common, Dr. Ehrenstaff notes, to dress both boys and girls in white cotton dresses until about 6 years old. This is a little over a century ago, because these garments were easy to clean and pass down to siblings. Pink was used for boys, by the way, and blue for girls. The idea of separating baby clothing by gender or color didn't appear until 1918, when a department store trade publication declared pink for boys, blue for girls. This remained true until the 1940s, when department stores in the U.S. switched the colors based on what retailers thought families preferred, pink for girls, blue for boys. This broadly accepted reversal in gender norms for pink and blue was not based on a discovery of essential sex-type color coding, but rather the result of marketing to sell more clothes and increase profits. Surprise, 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 as Gomer Pyle used to say. This is fascinating stuff, Dr. Ehrenstaff.
It's very fascinating, and it does tell us about the part of gender that's not born but made. And I just have so many kids today who look at adults and say, don't you know that pink is just a people color and anybody should wear it who likes the color? It's not a boy color or a girl color, just a people color.
Well, why is this such a contentious issue? Not only transgender issues, but but gender in as an issue of itself. We're all lathered up about this. Why?
That is also a very good question. I have not found any culture, human culture, that doesn't have some organization within their culture around gender. It's just very different from culture to culture. In our culture, for centuries now, it has been based on the bedrock of boy, girl, man, woman, male, female, that's determined at birth. And it's never actually been that way, but that has been the value system. And it has helped organize so that even before a baby's born now, we want to locate its gender. Are you having a boy or a girl? And it helps us know about the person. That's the bedrock of gender that we've all grown up with, lived with. Not all of us have complied to it. And now we have moving boulders around gender. And I would say the youth are moving those boulders faster than any of us are. And it makes us feel like we are now hikers moving across moving boulders, right, which is a lot less sturdy.
You note in your book that regret after gender-affirming surgeries is 1%, compared to 14% for other types of surgeries, including knee replacements. So people who do this, usually they do so for reasons that are personal to them, but most of them, 99% according to this survey, 99% are okay with it. Why are we so lathered up if we're not ever going to get this kind of surgery?
That is also a very good question. The happiness rates far outweigh the regret rates, absolutely. And it's not just that people are satisfied with the decisions they've made, particularly around medical transitions. It's that their lives get much, much better. And we have mm-hmm. in our culture a tendency to say, you can have surgery to enhance your gender if you are a cisgender person. That is, your gender matches the sex designated to you at birth. So if you want to have some kind of sculpting of your body, we celebrate that. We don't worry about regrets. But going back to the anxiety about the shakeup on gender not being fixed at birth, but something that somebody can claim for themselves and essentially paint their own canvas, we get all up in arms about this is either against God's will or against nature, or will be the downfall of society. None of that is proving to be true. In fact, we're seeing the opposite. Okay.
Well, let's try to slide one more caller in. The book is Gender Explained from Dr. Diane Ehrensaft. Dr. Ehrensaft is a person who knows this terrain extremely well. James and Metairie, please be brief. You're on, my friend.
Hi,
good
hi,
morning.
Jim. Thank you very much. If I could throw in something here, I think the fierce defenders of the notion there are only two genders are the evangelicals trying to defend the Bible that says there are only male and female humans. They'll do anything to justify the binary model, despite what nature tells us.
All right. Is that fair to single out the evangelical crowd? Of course, that too is diverse population, but many, mm-hmm. many do believe what James said they do.
I think James makes a very important point. It's one of many groups who hold that stance, either for religious reasons or for personal reasons or for political reasons. And I learn most from the children who say, well, God makes us all in their image, so we are all God's children. So all of us should be celebrated in all our genders, not just people in one of two boxes. So I think James makes a very good point about what people are holding on to. Well, but you can still have your religious mm-hmm. beliefs and have gender diversity.
Well, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to catch up with Dr. Ehrensaft, who's a prolific writer about this topic, the most sensitive one in American and perhaps world life. Now, Gender Explains the book. Thank you. And donating today, my pleasure, donating today, Dr. Mike and Eloise Futrell and Lauren Hebert. Thank you so much. Back tomorrow. Stay safe. Stay tuned.